Stardate 96685.73. You're listening to another episode of Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name's Mike Moody. With me, he has an extreme empathy deficit. It's Grant Davis.
What is that about? It's true, but where did that come from?
Didn't you watch the episode?
Oh, I did. Yeah, okay.
All right. And he doesn't need sick bay. He needs Stamets. It's Clyde Haynes.
I can deal with that, yeah.
We're talking about Season 2, Episode 2 of Star Trek Discovery. It's called Point of Light, written by Andrew Colville, directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. Guest starring Mia Kirshner as, I want to say Martha because that was the name of May. Batman's mom.
Yeah, it's May.
It's Amanda.
May. Oh, Amanda, Spock's...
Yes.
Spock's
Nicely done on the director's name, Mike. Good job.
Oh, thanks.
Olatunde's been directing couple different episodes, huh?
Yeah, he's going to direct like three more.
Yes, this is his third, and he's also going to do episodes 13 and 14 of this season, so...
Nice.
Yeah.
Before we dive into Point of Light, you can find us at StarTrekPod.com. You can find tons of ways to contact us there. Email, Facebook, Twitter, just go to StarTrekPod.com. You can also listen to our back catalog. We covered every episode of Season 1. And if you're just joining us for Season 2, we've covered the past two episodes. So just go to StarTrekPod.com. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. Grant, there's another way people can help us.
Yeah. You guys can go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod, and there you can make a per-episode pledge. Give us a buck or two. Actually, just give us $2, and then you guys can join us over on our private Slack channel, where we will talk nerdy discussions about theories and whatnot.
So far this season, it's only been... This is the third episode
of
the season. We picked up one new $2 patron every episode.
Oh.
So 3 weeks, three people... That's great. It's a good start is what it is.
Yeah. Well, let's snowball that. And if we can double each episode by the end, I think we'll be millionaires. I'm not sure how that works.
I don't do math. Clyde, you're the engineer.
Are you guys getting paid for this show? Because somebody owes me a check.
Oh, shut up. Let's shut up about all that.
No. Yikes. All right. Point of Light.
Point of Light. It's an 80s ballad, Mike.
It's an 80s ballad. It's also a...
Why is it called Point of Light?
Title of a Star Trek episode. Oh, now it's corny?
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I have no idea why it's called Point of Light.
Because it sounds good like a Michael Bolton song. Point of Light.
Michael Bolton songs don't sound like that.
versions do.
I just admitted that I listened to Michael Bolton one time.
You did.
On a podcast that everybody listens to. All right. I think it's time for hot takes.
Hot takes!
All right. I want to go with Clyde Haynes first because he and I share our opinions on the show.
Because you know episode. I like the episode quite a bit. It's not that I didn't like last week's episode, but I thought it last week was much more mission of the week, great. But this got back to that cinematic feel that I like, where every minute I was engaged and the commercial would pop up and I was like, oh no, I'm ready for more. And so I just felt like I was engaged the entire time. It moved, the plots were moving. I really enjoyed this episode. I know we're gonna kind of break it down and I'll go through my thoughts in detail. Even though we didn't get a whole lot of Stamets in this episode.
Not enough Stamets.
I thought we got a little bit of everybody. So
Stamets at least got a good shout out in this episode towards the end. So that was cool.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Clyde. This is my favorite episode of this season so far. Grant.
Grant's
looking at me like, what the fuck?
I'm with you, Mike.
It's so weird that you didn't like this one. Anyway, I didn't have the issues with the pacing that I've been having all season. I thought this was, some parts are a little too fast, but it was relatively well paced, especially since we had, three or four major plots going on with major characters. I loved the return of Ash. I loved all the palace intrigue going on the Klingon homeworld.
And the tech was amazing. Like, I'm a tech head.
Yeah.
So when you look at the ships, you've had several different ships. You've got a kind of preview of a future Klingon battlecruiser. Mm. Like, there's so much there. Like, they had me at holographic ships.
I knew Georgiou was going to show up at the end, and I knew that reveal was going to be her, but I was still delighted when it happened. Oh, yeah. I loved her ship. There was so much cool shit going on this episode. We're going to dive deep into it, but I liked it a lot. Hey, Grant Davis.
Yes?
How much did you like this episode?
I'd like to issue a challenge to both of you.
Oh no,
man!
Succinctly describe what happened in this episode. In this episode, like 1 to 2 seconds.
Pure fucking Star Trek.
Come on,
joy.
No. Plot wise, try and describe what happened.
I came is what happened.
What? How are you watching this?
It was a good show.
You took my advice about the candles in the bubble bath. All right.
Yeah, I felt the emotion. Finally.
I'll give you 6 words.
Okay.
Klingon unification.
Okay.
Let's see. Burnham pissed off mother.
Okay.
Mad Libs, people.
I don't. Here's my problem with this episode. It felt like a filler episode. This is one where they're moving chess pieces into place for other big events to happen. Mm-hmm. And it, like, when I thought about the kind of the plots that are going on, the Klingon stuff is always a little bit boring to me. I think I complained about that a bunch last season because I don't like to read. I'm illiterate.
But there was a lot more English. There was a lot more English happening.
There was a lot more
English. Almost too much English.
And there was that cool transition where the subtitles, you know, fade out and turn into Klingon when she starts speaking English. And the episode started out with...
Previously
on Star Trek Discovery in Klingon.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
That was pretty clever.
That was a good joke.
Not to mention, while we were in the kind of the Klingon plot line... Tell me that's not the coolest, like, holographic phone you've ever seen.
Holographic phone?
Like, it was like a wall. It was almost like a holographic mirror.
Oh, when Burnham's talking to him?
Yes.
Oh, dude, yeah, the Skype call?
Yes.
Yeah, they filmed that really well.
That was phenomenal.
That's what that was.
I thought it was stupid that they were doing it, but... I thought it was stupid that they were having this phone call in a place where he was clearly someone's going to figure that out.
Where apparently everyone knew that he was calling her.
Well, because the red paint, this was ridiculous. The red paint that he wiped off the bitch father of Cole from the House of Cole, whatever, is spy paint.
Spy paint. Nice.
Spy
like
paint?
That. Spy
Is that
paint.
What that plot point was?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my. At some point, I probably looked down to make a note while they were talking back and forth, mm-hmm. and it was something about, like, I bugged you, ha ha ha, but I was like, I don't know what he said about
my paint is his bugs, ha ha.
I will say.
Nanobot.
Lots of silly tech. Like, Cole's bitch dad had a lot of weird tech.
Yes. I will say this, though. It's interesting that, and I don't know how they're going to figure this out, but we're in the past, but their tech is better than the future.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that I'm like, at some point,
except,
how do we do that?
Except for this. I keep wanting... It's Amanda, right?
Yeah.
Spock's mom. Okay. She stole Spock's medical files, and then at Starbase 5, they're like, where the fuck are his medical files? Okay, they don't have the cloud?
Right.
They only have the flash drive.
It was a 3 1/4. You know, we're talking about early Star Trek. It was the short, hard floppy disk.
You can't trust putting it on the cloud that it might get stolen. You can't trust having it apparently on your USB drive.
On USB drive, yeah. But that kind of tracks because in the Next Generation, like, they didn't send emails. They just handed each other iPads. Remember when they?
Yes.
Which was fun.
Just disposable iPads?
Yeah. Just replicate them over
email
and over.
The future.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just felt like... Like, the storylines were a little bit small stakes. There's investigation going on into what might be going on with Spock and his medical records, but that just seems like a C plot. But that's going on with our lead characters. I don't know, was the A plot supposed to be the Klingons? Because that also kind of felt like a side thing that's going on. I didn't know what was supposed to be the main focus of this episode.
I mean,
it felt all a little bit just kind of like. Like I said, like, it's filler episode of them, like, kind of moving stuff into place.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they kind of sped along what's going on with Tilly, because I love the character, and I don't want to see Tilly be a wreck. I think she's the heart of the show, and it's crucial that we have that voice remain. And if they were to just break her, I think that would be to the detriment of the structure of the show itself.
I think so. I think I was so pleased that Tilly was only crazy for what the fuck? What is happening tonight?
Haunted, man.
Okay. I was really pleased that Tilly was only broken or haunted for half an episode last week, half an episode this week. Mm-hmm. You know, I was really happy to see that she gave up the ghost, as it were. Wow, that's really bad. To Michael, and let everything be known. Like, this is what's happening to me. And it turns out that she caught a fungus.
Yeah, she had a ghost fungus.
She had a ghost fungus.
A mycelium fungus, but the mycelium fungus exists in a universe where Stamets is captain. Where Colbert must be alive, and that Colbert is also haunting him and exists in this other universe realm. Because, like, she's a fully formed adult version of a childhood memory who still has a connection to a Tilly in her universe. And so she came there with some sort of agenda and was using using Tilly as her medium to try and achieve a cryptic goal.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be the last we see of her.
I don't think so. It was unclear what she was doing there.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely not the last we'll see of her. But so you're thinking that Stamets is captain in her universe?
Yeah. She said, like, she's looking for the captain, and then...
Oh, because he's captain of the spore
drive. Of the spore drive. Yeah. I think she's misunderstanding what his role is, but she sees him as... the person who flies the ship. But I think what we're really getting at...
Ah, okay.
I think what we're going to find out is there's something else that happens when they use the spore drive that we're not...
For a second, I thought maybe she was like a mirror-verse kind of image that has got locked into Tilly's brain.
Right.
And like a crossover that was only visible to her.
Mm-hmm. There's more to it. There's going to be a lot more to it, because it was explained away. Like, Tilly's like, okay, well, the fact that she's a fungus makes sense, but how did she become a projection of somebody I knew? And Stamets just kind of hand waves it.
Yeah, like Stamets doesn't kind of say like, oh, I have the same thing going on with Colbert, but he did kind of reference that he was haunted. And we even saw in that one trippy episode that he was interacting in some other mushroom forest realm with Colbert. So I feel like there's some other cross section, some other like slice of universe going on there.
I'll tell you this. I found it all fun.
A fun guy.
The Tilly being haunted by the ghost fungus. I'm a fun guy.
It was a mushroom.
Last week, somebody said fungi on the show instead of fungi, didn't they? I don't know. Anyway.
It doesn't work for a pun as well.
Nope, not nearly as well.
But this week, all the stuff was fun. Everything we're talking about in terms of – we talked a lot last week about the Mycelial Network. And I was kind of complaining about it. Like, okay, this is not super entertaining, just getting to the weeds about the Mycelial Network. But we kind of did the same thing again this week in the episode, and it was fun and entertaining. You know, especially when he zapped it out of Tilly, zapped the fungus out of her.
His proton pack or whatever.
That was fantastic. He became a ghost. Stamets became a Ghostbuster for a second.
He basically did. So great. He pulled a ghost out of her.
He did.
What I loved is that it was this might hurt a little bit. And then right into it, like no warm up, no, all right, I'm going to count you down. Just like, yeah, I'm just going to zap you with this thing and hope you don't die.
Yeah.
And he was like, it looked like he was having a lot of fun doing it too.
Yeah, it was like he was out on the deep sea, like fishing, like, I'm gonna get it.
Yeah. Reel it in. But also fun was all the palace intrigue. The fight scene midway or partway through the episode with Tyler
The big Klingon battle?
Yeah, with Tyler and Laurel going all Last Jedi, you know?
It did totally feel like Last Jedi, where they're both, like, spitting off into their own fights, but it's, like, teamwork and the lightning strikes and...
it was great.
Even the little electric lightsaber thing that Darth Maul...
Yeah,
bitch father, whatever you're calling him,
Cole's bitch father had a His bitch father. His bitch father had a Darth Maul fucking lightsaber.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
I thought it was a nice touch, too, that, I mean, they're just destroying everybody. And then I'm watching and going, really? Like, are they that good? And then at the very end, he's like, okay, enough of this. And then just paralyzes both of them. And I was like, huh. That's the guy who at the end of the fight goes, you know what? I'm just going to shoot you both.
I've never been so happy to see a dead Klingon hanging from the ceiling.
Agreed there.
I hope that whole house gets wiped out. Fuck the House of Kor.
Wait, but that was a bad guy? I thought that was like the good guy who was protecting their baby. He got killed and was hanging.
Him too, the uncle?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. He was an asshole. But Kor's bitch dad died too, right?
Yeah, he was suspended in air.
The bubble.
With the bubble.
Yes.
And then Laurel whipped out the knife and then stabbed him. Well, really, gutted him.
Yeah.
Through the bubble.
That's right. That was fucking cool.
It was amazing. I mean, that whole scene was pretty intense.
Gutted through the bubble. That's my new metal album. Sung by Michael Bolton, actually.
Oh, gosh. And
Do it. What was it called?
The listeners want it. Stuck up the bubble.
Gutted through the bubble.
Yeah, death metal.
Gonna put a hole on me. Sorry. All right. Okay, let's try to go through the episode a little bit chronologically.
Linearly. Sure.
Yeah. All right, so Stilly's Ghost Bud gets a disco t-shirt. We don't even have those.
First of all, those t-shirts are amazingly hot. No?
They're pretty cool. They're slick.
I thought they were pretty slick.
Do you think they're like wicking fabric?
I mean, I would hope so, the way they were running through this ship like that.
Would they be hot on our bodies, though?
I mean, maybe not as hot.
There's a reason we're podcasters, my friend.
Yeah.
Back to our dungeon we crawl.
This does feel like a dungeon, doesn't it? Why do we need 70s disco lighting during a 4K run?
Right. Like, what's going on with it being like some ultimate challenge half marathon that they're doing where the lights are flicking?
I assumed that they simply were running through and simulating if a ship is kind of dying of power.
Like an emergency situation.
Yeah, like you got to get to the escape pods or something. And that's when a half marathon would be useful.
Oh, okay. How big is that ship that they have to run?
It's a big ship.
Have to run 13 miles or whatever to get to the other side.
Well, I like that we set up again that Tilly is in this command program. And our initial arc with Tilly here has been, can she do this command program? And we already know after we saw, can she complete this command program? But we already know that Tilly we saw last season can easily glide through this program because she's the best, right? So they had to give her some kind of adversary or some kind of, you know, problem or block that maybe threatens her graduation of this program, which was the ghost spore fungi girl.
She had a gross fungus infection.
And it
happens to people. You know, drink some cranberry juice, you'll be fine.
But I appreciate it. I'm glad they didn't just like regress Tilly.
Right.
And there was a reason for her anxiety here.
Man, May was super creepy, too.
She was really
creepy.
She
was like friendly and earnest, and all of a sudden, like, her smile doesn't go away, and you're like, all right, cut away from this scene, or just kind of move the camera away from her. Something, please, guys. It's too much.
Did you notice, Clyde, in this first episode? I mean, did you notice in this first scene when Michael is walking around the ship, there's a hint of the next-gen theme? And it was really nice and soft and...
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I heard it, but I felt like, wow, this looks familiar, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's this, I was thinking back to like TNG and just the way the corridors are built,
mm-hmm.
Only much darker, a little colder.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I did feel something. I didn't quite hear in it though.
Okay, so we get back on the bridge and we find out that Amanda is there. She shows up in Sarek's ship to get Michael to secretly help her figure out what's going on with Spock.
Did either of you think that was Sarek in that ship?
No.
I mean, I kind of figured.
I did.
Because, like, okay, we'll just see some more of that actor. They like the actor.
I mean, I just say no because I saw the previews with Amanda all over the place. So.
Oh, I just knew. I was like, this is what the show does, right? The show goes up. It's going to be this. And you're thinking, okay, well, I'm pretty sure it's not going to be that person, but I'm not quite sure who it's going to be. So I was thinking, how could they fool us this time? Mm. But I knew it wasn't going to be Sarek.
Did you like that it was Amanda instead of Sarek?
You know what? We've seen so little of her since the beginning of the show that I think this brings in a different dynamic of understanding kind of who Burnham is, Burnham's background, and her relationship with Spock. I thought this was well done in terms of kind of giving us this exposition without it, you know, being Pike.
One of my favorite parts of this episode was actually Amanda, all of her interactions with Burnham and like how she comes away from this episode. I was just like more invested in her, and I found her so much more compelling and interesting than before. Like she just seemed like the human side of the relationship who just kind of had to relinquish her human aspects because Sarek's kind of abusive and like forces upon her that like they're going to go by the Vulcan way and not her way and neglect who you are. And it just seems like an abusive relationship before.
It really did.
And she seemed like she had to recede.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, oh, now I'm seeing the strength in her and how, especially the scene where she's talking to Burnham and she's like, and Burnham's like, I'm sorry, I'm going to make this right. And she's like, no, I'm going to make this right.
Mm-hmm. And she
fuck
walks
off.
Away.
You've already fucked this up.
Well,
peace.
Even more than that, it was that.
That was like my favorite moment of the whole episode.
It was a good moment.
It was the kiss and then the walk off, right? Like you're like, oh, it's love. No, it's not loving. No, that's the you're dead to me kiss.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't interpret it that harsh.
No, it wasn't that bad.
I think she was just like, obviously, you have a strained relationship. You're not the one who can handle this right now. You shouldn't be the one who's handling it. I'm going to go ahead and just take care of the shit. And I like it because it's like it's a secondary or tertiary character telling the main protagonist of our show, you can't handle this. I'm just going to beat it.
I also thought that what you had is you had a mother who, I mean, quite frankly, is looking at – you've got a mother with two kids. Mm-hmm. One's adopted. And now what you realize is that your adopted kid has, in her words, irreparably harmed your natural birth kid. I think she's a little pissed.
Dude.
I think she's a little pissed. Where's her own personal accountability for the structure of the family dynamic
that she was in charge of raising?
She did hold herself accountable.
She copped to that. And I think she's been looking at it as like, a lot of this is my fault. Mm-hmm. And then Burnham shows up and goes, well, actually, it was me. And I think she's dealing with that all. It's brand new.
Yeah.
And she's got someone else outside of herself to blame a little bit. I think she's a little hot. Like, she's upset.
Maybe. I think the relationship between them is just already interesting. Like, right when she beamed on, Michael, like, said to her, Amanda. She didn't say mother. She said Amanda. So, like, in a public, like, setting, she seems to refer to her with her first name. So it's not like a name of like necessarily reverence, but it's like a disconnected, impersonal sort of relationship. But later, like when, I don't know if Burnham was trying to appeal to her emotionally, she calls her mother.
She does.
And I was like, what's this kind of toggling between? Is she trying to in some way be more emotionally manipulative? Burnham, that is, mm-hmm. when she does appeal to the relationship aspect of their humanness.
I don't know. I think it was just the intensity of the moment, or they were actually – they had a familial bond, and they were working together to try and help Spock. It was just the intimacy of the moment between them. Yeah, no one else was around, and they're both working to try to repair their family, right?
Yeah. I've got a completely random but related question.
Okay.
What do you think Amanda's last name is? Because if Amanda's human, so Smith. I'm assuming Jones, right?
Amanda Smith.
But so when she marries Spock, does she just instead
Sarek.
Of
that's her son?
No,
you gross,
sorry,
dude.
sorry.
Gross.
When she marries Sarek, does she just cut it? Like, does she's like, oh, my name was Jones, and now it's nothing? So when she walks around, like
she's like Madonna.
Yeah, I'm just one name. I'm Amanda. Amanda what? No, that's it. Just Amanda.
I am. She's at the Amanda on Twitter.
Yeah, at the Amanda.
Yeah. Now I'm curious. Bynes or something. Amanda Bynes.
No, definitely Ooh. Not that one. No.
I like Amanda Bynes.
There was this little scene right before all this went down with Amanda popping on the ship where Pike's kind of worried about the fact that he's sort of concerned that he might have sold out Spock because he notified the Federation that he was in
medical treatment.
Yeah, medical treatment or whatever, treatment. Section 5 or whatever it's called. Starbase 5?
Starbase 5,
yeah. And anyway, I thought there was this great moment where Burnham kind of like goes up and immediately reassures him. Like she doesn't even hesitate. She's like, look, dude, you were following protocol. That's not a betrayal of Spock. Don't even feel bad about that. And I was like, she's got his back. I like the relationship here. And it was just such a small moment, but I appreciated it.
You know, one thing we're not getting, and I guess this is why I might be struggling with Pike just a little bit, is I'm used to the captains in Star Trek to kind of exist as these really competent officers, but also mentors to everyone else on the ship. Like when you think of even kind of Kirk and Picard and Janeway and Sisko, like they have this gravitas of, let me help you. I know most of the answers.
What? You're not getting that from Pike? You are crazy. That's like all he's been. He's been all swagger in command.
I think so too. Yeah. I mean, he has a bit of humanity to him where he maybe is not always a take charge captain like Picard or Kirk. And that's fine. I think that kind of tracks for what we've seen of Pike in previous media, previous iterations.
He's got some swag, but it's a different type. It's, you know what it is? It's not really a fatherly swag. It's more like a cool uncle swag.
I'm down with that.
I feel like he came in a little bit hot initially with them, and like in the very first episode we see that Burnham has to kind of dress him down about like, hey, you don't know who we are and you should have a little bit more empathy for our situation and what we just went through too, because we don't leave anyone behind or whatever, right? I feel like that kind of like humbled him, at least in his relationship with Burnham. I don't necessarily think that we're seeing the dynamic play out with him with everyone where he's just a little bit I don't know. I mean, whatever the crew wants. But I think with her, there's a certain degree of respect and maybe even reverence where he will table his immediate impulsive decisions for her to like hear her out and like have a conversation.
Yeah, they've laid the foundation for that. Also, it's a weird moment for the character for that handsome Mount is playing, because this isn't his crew, right?
No.
And he's toggling between the Enterprise and the Discovery. And he's taking over. So it's a weird command position that he's in. How deep does he get with these people? Does he truly put his foot down and become their leader? How invested does he get? And I think that's written into the character and the way he's interacting with everybody on the bridge.
I get the feeling he wants to become very invested in Tilly.
Okay.
I mean, there's a little something kind of I don't know.
Creepy uncle about that? There
not,
you go. Now the uncle's
no,
back.
Not creepy uncle. But I mean, I think about it. Like, there is no love interest. There's no, like, I would call it more of a, the way Star Trek has been doing it, more of a D plot than a B plot. But there is no interest. But I see this kind of, I don't know if it's chemistry or forced chemistry, but there's something there between these two characters that the writers keep bringing to, right? Like,
sure.
Of all the people that she could have
talked to.
They're
dancing around. They're certainly flirtatious. And it makes sense that Tilly lacking a certain degree of a filter makes her, you know, open to saying things that other people might be thinking. And he's not one to necessarily just be shy. So I think it just kind of works perfectly for their characters that they'll dance around that.
It's a fun dynamic. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay, so we saw some Klingons in this episode, guys.
Just a few.
So these Klingons are we meet them chilling at a pretty intense barbecue. Lots of fucking flames everywhere.
What is this super moody emo Klingon land that they live on?
With 80s hair.
Oh, yeah. They're all growing their hair back. And
they all have the hair.
All the whiny, bitch-ass fanboy Trekkies who had to, like, throw a shit fit last season of, like, but their hair and they don't match the other iteration or the original series or whatever the fuck. All it took was one line of dialogue of,
that's it.
Oh, you know, after the war, they decided they can grow their hair back. Done. Get over it, you assholes. Sorry, do I need to go back and, like, keep my rant going?
No, you're good. I think we're fine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it makes sense that they have hair now. They look better with hair, I think.
Yes,
not just because, you know, I knew about the other – I like the other Klingon look, but they look good. I think it complements the aesthetic. And they don't all – they all look different. They all have different facial hair. And I think one of the reasons – one of the best reasons that Klingons can have hair and facial hair now is because Tyler looks fucking good with a big-ass beard and a man bun.
Tyler looks great.
Yeah.
Laurel looks like a plastic Muppet monster now. Like, what is going on with her outfit? I thought it looked kind of, like, ridiculous.
Look, Grant, if you and Mike are just going to disagree all night, this is going to be my favorite podcast ever.
Oh, man. I don't know. I kept looking at this.
I could tell them apart.
She has, like, this chisel rock face going on.
She always had the chisel rock face.
I actually thought it brought a bit of humanity's not quite the right word, warmth to Laurel. To see her with hair. I mean, it was bad hair. Like, it was big hair. And it was a little distracting when I first saw it. But then once I got used to it, I was like, yeah, okay. I think this is an appropriate good look. It gives her some structure instead of just being like...
She certainly has structure. She looks like a gargoyle to me. Like, it looks like she's like all stone face. And then
was stone face. Now she's warmer.
We had these other ones that looked like cone heads. Where were those other, like, Klingons? Remember the ones that popped up and they're, like, bald, but their head seemed to, like, extend back like a xenomorph? It was weird.
Well, no, I mean, we had some of those last season, too. Yeah. Like, the one that was floating out and they beamed a bomb into it. Like, it had that big old weird, you know, xenomorph head as well.
It just looked like, what's his name? The mastermind or whatever from Green Lantern. the guy with the big head.
Yeah. Well, I'm not in love with the Klingon look, but I think they look cooler, they look better. I can tell them apart more.
I do like that they're growing hair.
Yeah.
In general.
Okay. Well, what's all that about?
I don't know. I wanted to complain, like, every time they did a close-up on her makeup or something, I was just like, it just looks like someone wearing a mask now. Like, it seemed like a little bit better, like the lighting or something.
It did seem like she was wearing a mask. I think
I've been way too bitchy this episode.
That's okay. I think more than any of the other Klingons. Well, speaking of bitchy, I thought her voice was a little too. I'm gonna bitch. It was a little too modulated. You know, unlike the other Klingons, Laurel's voice was a little too modulated, but it kind of seemed to go away towards the end.
She was like, I don't know. Do you believe in life after love? That was a weird part.
I tell you right now, I'm thinking, if Anthony Rapp is listening, please don't play this podcast with Mary Chifo. Like, don't. Just.
Dude, that's not on her.
No.
Her performance was great.
It's on the guy who made the mask.
Don't play it for that person.
Okay, so I really enjoyed all the palace intrigue going on with the Klingons. I like that.
I did too, Mike.
Yeah.
Don't pay any attention to Grant. I enjoyed it too.
It was weird that they had a baby. That was a little strange.
Why was it weird?
I don't know, because
they ripped its head off.
I mean, that was weird.
Well, not
I wasn't expecting that.
Not just that, but they had to throw in this awkward line of like, oh, I wasn't pregnant last year because it just stayed outside of me because I was. And it's like, okay. In other words, we just figured that she should have a baby now. We didn't think about it.
There is some writing to like, well, we've got to put these lines in here or the Star Trek geeks are going to just go to town on us. But I thought that when we saw kind of this relationship between Vok and Laurel, the fact that they had a baby gives us some grounding that they really had this intense relationship before he became a human that we didn't get to kind of
which was weird. It seemed kind of shoehorned in. I was like, when did they have time to do this? When did they have time to have a relationship as intense as a fucking burning sun, you know, where she's like, it was more intense than what Kalis had for his wife.
Right, like they didn't know each other very long.
Yeah.
Like, and what's the deal? Like, his outside body is human, but Did they also change it to human sperm? Couldn't he have, like, when they were hooking up back on, like, the Discovery or whatever, couldn't that have been when she got pregnant and, like, hid it from him? They could have done something else with the timeline there. I don't know.
I think there was some good themes going on here. We're going back to the theme of duality with Tyler struggling, being torn in two. Also, we haven't seen Spock yet, but we're learning that he's also being torn in two with, you know, logic or emotion.
We're never going to see Spock. It's a red herring. The whole series.
They cast Ethan Peck, man.
Yeah, and we're never going to see him. It's kind of like I think that's what
Anson Mount's been tweeting pictures of him and Ethan Peck hanging out in set. It's going to happen.
Oh, we'll see. I mean, this is going on. We'll see.
It's just a red herring. It feels like shit. What were we just talking about? Did you edit this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We were talking about...
Oh, the Vok. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Vok.
It feels like with the relationship between Ash and Laurel, he was basically telling her, like, this is a fucked up non-consensual relationship we're in right now.
Well, she was his abuser.
I feel very confused, and I don't actually like it every time you touch me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like... Okay, we're getting into some heavier shit here about, like, I'm not digging you, and I'm not digging this, and maybe you should respect my boundaries, and, like, where do Klingons kind of exist in that realm of that kind of conversation? They seem kind of fucked up in other aspects. They eat each other and shit.
Right.
So I don't know how they're like, oh, respect your boundaries. but then, like... All of a sudden, a beat later, they say that, and we have this, like, we have this tension, or this kind of sexual chemistry and tension between him and Burnham,
right,
that is still just, like, so palpable that I'm like, I see the human in you is clearly drawn to her and vice versa. Like, right. You guys are digging each other.
Yeah, Vok is dead. He's all Tyler now.
So what is the... What's the BS, like, plot point excuse they can come up with that, like, pulls him back into that relationship? And it's a baby!
With Burnham?
No, with Laurel.
With Laurel, yeah.
Have a baby there, and suddenly, the guy who just a second ago was saying, like, I don't even like you touching me, is like, I love you forever across the stars and galaxy, and I will be there as your baby daddy for all eternity. Whatever, I don't know what he was saying, but
it didn't go that weird
heel turn kind of thing.
It didn't go that intense. He didn't say, like, I'm going to be intimate with you now and be okay with that, because the issue he had with her was, you're my abuser, I cannot be intimate like that with you, it's just not going to happen. But when he's presented with this instant family situation, he says, well, I'm going to make this right, and I'm going to take care of this family as much as I can. And my role here is the torchbearer, the protector of Laurel, the chancellor of the Klingon Empire. So I'm going to stay here and take care of my family and do my job. I mean, that makes sense. He didn't say I'm gonna you know, go to bed with you every
night. I had a slightly different take.
Okay.
So I think what I saw was when she touched him, and he said it's a violation. What I thought was that is the Tyler part saying, I'm in love with Burnham. So when you touch me, like it's almost as though I'm cheating on her.
Sure.
Right? And so he kind of recoiled, and she kind of realized, wow, he's not mine. But when he saw the baby, there became this love, the Vok part of him kind of jumped out and became more dominant. And then what he said to her was, I'm going to be completely dedicated and committed to you. That there's this love for what they could have as a family that has kind of bubbled up to the surface. That's kind of the way I think
it is. Other stuff.
Okay. Yeah, like I want this more than kind of wanting Burnham.
I don't know.
I'm just saying, that's what I said.
But it was never going to happen because you can't be the chancellor and have a family.
Right.
You got to cut them heads off.
Like the whole thing just felt like a weird cookie cutter. Here's where we want to take them in their relationship, and we only have one episode to do it.
Sure.
Let's establish they don't get along, and so if they do separate, it won't be the worst thing in the world. But let's all of a sudden tie in some emotional reason why they wouldn't want to separate with a baby all of a sudden present, and him committing to them, and Laurel still has feelings for him. And then let's throw Georgiou in there to kind of wreck shit and throw everything sideways and basically say, what are you, an idiot? You can't rule all these Klingons. And it was like the most logical thing I've seen in the show when Georgiou just like outlines,
Yeah.
You can't have this human dude here
right.
who's going to ruin your whole empire. And you can't have this baby that's going to make people like once she kind of like divorced that whole relationship, I was like, well, yeah, that makes sense. And that's how you tie in your new series, Star Trek.
Section 31.
Yeah.
Her ship was hot.
Her ship was the ship. When they revealed the nacelles.
Oh man. That was and so the cool. cloak. Like.
Yeah.
I don't know what you guys are talking about, honestly.
Nacelles.
Yes. I mean, well, you know, and then you've got Leland, I guess her number one or not. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that guy looks like, don't trust him.
Right.
Do not trust Leland.
And now Tyler might get himself a black badge.
Oh, that's definitely going to happen.
It's going to be in Section 31.
So I'm guessing.
That's interesting as like a way of like, I would like to think that the Federation is smart enough to not allow someone like Vok/Ash back onto the Discovery to be like, hey, I'm back. I'm going to join the crew. We found a loophole and I'm here. But them just saying, we're actually going to move you onto this spinoff show we're doing over mm-hmm. here, Section 31.
Yeah.
And you're still part of the Star Trek family. We'll have crossover events here and there. Right. Like,
well, I was wondering, like, because Michelle Yeoh was billed in this episode as a special guest star. So I was like, is the actor who plays Tyler, whose name is, I don't remember, the guy's name?
Tyler? Ash Tyler? No, I don't, he's going to look it up here in a second. Shadiq Fazad or something.
It's
Shahzad Latif. Was not billed as a guest star, right, Clyde? He was billed in the main titles.
He was in the main titles.
As a like, cast member.
He was one of the last main titles. Because, so I wonder and I was looking for, oh, who's, okay, so we're going to see him.
Do we think he's going to spin off to the Section 31 show that's been in development or?
You know, I used to be able to use, like, who's in the show and where they're in the show as kind of a cheat sheet. But now they'll just make up new titles per show. So I don't know how they're going to keep him kind of going with the plots, right? Because to Grant's point, you can't bring him back to the Disco. And you've got to be able to give him his own thing because it's clear that the fans, you know, are drawn to him and that you want to keep him around. And so I think, you know, putting him on a Section 31 based show is probably a great look.
Yeah. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
So we didn't get a lot of Red Angel science versus religion driving the plot here. I mean,
we got a bit.
We got some with Spock and I like the reveal that the Red Angel has been appearing to him since he was a child. And I like the idea of the Red Angel leading Spock to Burnham when she was either ran away or was lost.
So it still seems like the Red Angel is a protector of Burnham.
Right.
Even though she used Spock as a conduit.
Right.
And it also seemed curious to me that Burnham mentioned that. That the Red Angel's only shown up to her and to Spock. Like, she doesn't seem... Did she not know that Pike saw that video in episode 2, last week's episode?
Oh, yeah, they haven't talked about it
yet. At the very end, where he sees there's a Red Angel that pops up.
Yeah, that was odd that was not addressed.
So did this Red Angel pop up to blast them there? Because it's all part of the pieces moving into place for something that's ultimately a destiny for Burnham.
Maybe.
Because
Burnham is our main character.
Because it does seem a little bit otherwise a bit mundane that this Red Angel, who is able to pop in and out of different people's lives, would help just this girl Burnham be found when she was running away. Because it's crucial that she be brought back, right?
Yeah.
So if it is, then it seems to chart that. If the Red Angel also popped up for that little small community and blasts them to another planet, that's part of these pieces of a puzzle of some larger end game that this Red Angel's striving toward that has Burnham as a crucial component that she's been watching since a kid.
Wants her to turn that donkey wheel.
Right? It's a matter of turning the donkey wheel.
She really wants Burnham to... punch in the numbers into the computer.
Oh my gosh. Are you guys making fun of me? I don't care.
A little bit.
I don't care.
Well, what I liked was a return to the theme of, you know, science versus religion or logic versus religion when Spock's parents thought that it was logic for years that guided him to find Burnham, but it turns out it was this otherworldly thing, this mystical thing. That was a good return to the theme that we saw last week of the science versus religion. And then we also had
the, although it was still logical.
Right.
Like it's some being that is not just a delusion. It's either a shared folie à deux or some whatever, or it's actually a being that's popping up to both of them.
And then you had the Klingons saying stuff like these red signs in the universe are warnings
are an omen.
Yeah, they're an omen against warning us of your terrible leadership.
Well, I thought that was a nice way to draw us into the fact that the Klingons are aware of these red dots,
right?
And ultimately, at some point, we'll have to address them.
I don't know what I wanted to follow up with there. Sorry, guys. I'm dropping the ball here. I do have something else. Yeah, it also kind of crushes any of those theories that people have been suggesting that the Red Angel might be a shapeshifter. I don't know. Was it Q or one of these other aliens?
Oh, it's definitely not Q.
Not Q.
There was some suggestion that there's some sort of alien that can make itself look like whatever it wants to different people.
Sure.
But it's all looking like the same being, the same Red Angel.
Yeah, it's appearing.
To Spock or to her.
Yeah, it's taking the same form.
I thought that was kind of interesting. I also had a bit of a theory. This is wacky. Maybe I should leave it to the end.
No, I was going to just say to anyone listening, remember, Grant's the noob, so just give him a little bit of grace as he...
Are you saying just outright dismiss me?
Not saying dismiss you. I'm just saying lower your expectations.
Okay, here's my theory.
Is your theory that Georgiou really likes babies and she pretends not to like them?
Yes! You knew it!
Now that was a good theory.
Right?
It was really funny.
Okay, my theory is, in the very first episode of this season two, you see a reference to the book that Burnham's always gets read.
Alice in Wonderland?
Alice in Wonderland. And in the first season, they dropped a bunch of Alice in Wonderland at the very beginning when she's like crawling through the pipes and she said, like, right. My mom used to always read this to me.
Yeah.
And you can't help but notice the parallels there in the first season to be that being like, oh, this is foreshadowing of the Mirrorverse, right? Alice in the Looking Glass, the Mirrorverse, whatever. That's kind of what I was at least getting from it. But... and maybe you could even tie it falling down the rabbit hole of going into the spore drive and being transported to magical places.
Sure.
But here in the second season, like, why do they want to reference that again? I thought they don't necessarily casually drop a reference to that. I never think that because I always want to think it's an Easter egg.
I mean, it could be just setting the stage for Amanda's return, we saw.
It could have. Mm-hmm. My other theory is that what if there's a parallel between... in Through the Looking Glass, there's a character called the Red Queen.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Queen, not to be confused with the Queen of Hearts, is the Queen of Chess. And she initially, to Alice, is somewhat friendly. And she's like, come here, I'll teach you the game of chess. And the goal is for a pawn like yourself to eventually be leveled up to the status of a queen. And then
you
through
shall
the process
become
of,
a queen.
Right? Like through the process of... of Alice in some way kind of figuring out and leveling up to a queen, she becomes a rival of the Red Queen and they end up having to battle. And what if there's sort of a parallel of this Red Angel kind of taking Burnham as an apprentice of some sort or like taking an interest in some end game that is involving Burnham and wanting to put her through a series of challenges with these seven dots that elevates her to a status, a queen-like, a godlike, whatever status. But as a result, they're going to have to battle each other. There's going to be some conflict between them once you kind of...
I'm curious. A question for you.
This is rabbit hole shit.
I know, but I'm curious. Just, you know, we haven't really talked about this. Do you guys think that the Red Angel is good or bad?
I think it's got its own motivations, whether or not I would ascribe good or bad to it. I would say it wants something, and it wants... Burnham and the ship Discovery to be involved in that.
I think it's a plot device. It's going to do whatever the writers need to be done that week.
What a boring
Grant.
Obviously, correct answer.
Everything that you said about your theory, I'm actually latching on to some of that. I think it's a really interesting theory, But where's the emotion there, Grant?
You and the emotion. Get back to the bubble bath.
I mean, we've seen what two out of the seven dots now.
Sure.
Yeah. And it's interesting how they're going to pad that out, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're not going to get any real clarity on what the dots mean or what the red angel means, I think, for quite a while. But I tend to lean toward the red angel being a good figure. Again, I'm with you, Grant, with its own agenda. But ultimately, I think I don't see this as an adversary necessarily.
Right. I think it's going to seem like it has good intentions, but I think it's also going to be a bit manipulative. It's having them having the Discovery ship be its puppet, basically, and go do what I tell you to do. And every time we see these in kind of narratives, it ends up that someone who is under the impression that they have the best interests of other people at heart, if they're putting other people in these potentially dangerous situations to have Burnham jump through hoops to save their lives, that's evil.
That's true. Yeah.
So I don't know. That type of manipulation. It could go either way, I guess.
I wanted to touch on real quick. I also thought there was a good theme of matriarchal power in this episode. It kind of started subtly with Pike talking about his mom a little bit when...
What did he say?
They wanted Pike to crack the code on the flash drive. And he's like, no, that's against regulation, and my mother wouldn't like that.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, it gets underlined more when Amanda owns the mission to help Spock. And then it gets blasted in our faces when Laurel says, "I am your mother, all Klingons," and they all finally bow to her. It was pretty interesting. It makes me think that that might be an ongoing theme this season. It might have something to do with the Red Angel.
In addition to that, at the very moment where Laurel and Tyler are about to be killed, I mean, who saves them? But it's Georgiou, right? So when you think about that,
who's also a mother,
who's not only a mother but is considered like Burnham's mother, even though it's oddly enough Burnham's mother was in this episode.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, I think there is this matriarchal kind of power. Like, here she is to save the day again.
That is pretty fascinating. That's a good pickup on a running theme in this episode.
I found it very emotional.
Oh. There's a part where Ash is giving up the unnamed baby to a monastery.
Mm-hmm.
And right before that, baby's about to be dissipated in a light beam. You guys can tell me whatever terminology
beamed
that is.
Beamed away.
Sure.
Yeah. You don't know beamed away yet?
I'm sorry. Or
beamed
I don't
up?
Know.
Beam me up.
Beamed down?
Yeah.
Okay, when it's about to be beamed away, beamed up.
Beamed down.
Okay. I really wanted Ash to be like, "Goodbye, Worf."
No, it was it was an albino baby.
Yes, but I get what you're saying, Grant. Because
I would have thrown my computer out the window.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, I want to know the name of the baby so that we can start thinking about its genealogy and where it is in history.
Who cares?
But I mean, because you want to know, is this the descendant of the House of Moog or what?
Ugh.
But you can't.
No, you can't blow that. Like, Game of Thrones is entirely structured off of, like, these bastard babies. Like,
I don't care. Just give me,
wild.
Just,
so true.
Just give me a good story that compels me emotionally.
And Laurel was totally the mother of dragons in that scene where she's
"You
shall call me mother." And I'm just like, all right.
And Ash Tyler's definitely Jon Snow in that.
Yeah, all the Klingon stuff is definitely Game of Thrones-y, Benioff-y.
Let's talk about Spock killing someone, huh?
I'm not buying
Spock
it.
Spock didn't kill nobody.
Nope, not buying
it. Little 187?
Nope.
Yeah.
See, he's got a shady past, and you guys never knew all this shit went down with Spock. All
right.
There's no way that's going to hold up in canon.
Are they?
It's just not.
Ruining the character of Spock for you guys here?
No, it's fine.
It's fine.
It's going to be okay.
It's
right?
Fine.
Right, Clyde?
You know what? I really want to trust the writers, but they are taking a lot of liberty with the character that we've known as Spock.
It's fine.
Okay. We'll see.
I was just wondering, like, when I saw that, I'm like, huh, I wonder if everyone's going to be cool with, like, Spock was in a psych ward for a bit before he was on the Enterprise. Oh, and you know what? Let's just add in that he was rumored to have killed someone.
They're bad guys. They're bad guys. He killed the bad guys.
What if you think maybe he's been working with Section 31 this whole time?
No.
And he's an assassin?
Shut up.
What if this is the back history of Spock that, like, permanently ruins everything else in the future?
Spock is a secret Klingon.
These are all things that would make me cut off my subscription immediately and be like, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think someone would literally... Okay, I don't want to say it. Okay. All right. I enjoyed this episode. What else... anything else we want to touch on randomly as we've been doing the past half hour?
There's a moment where Pike goes to call the doctor from Starbase 5, and he pulls him up on the screen, and the doctor's like, oh, we're using just a flat screen, huh? Old school. And I want to ask you guys about that. Is that like a kind of a way to tie in that in the original series they use that kind of technology, and maybe like this is something that Pike passes on to Kirk or something? I don't know.
I think there's two ways we've seen ship-to-ship communication or ship-to-base communication, which has been the holograms, which I actually like. I think they're cool. And then there's the screen thing. So I guess most people are using the holograms at this point, and now I guess it was just a call out to that.
Which is interesting because later on, it's definitely more screen heavy.
Right.
Like when you think of the original series and you think of TNG, it's much more screen heavy.
Yeah, third season of Discovery, the hologram technology is going to...
It's going to get trapped in the cloud with the rest of the ship. I don't know. I'll also say that I really liked, and we talked about this a little bit briefly, but the whole kind of Tilly confessing this is what's been going on, and
yes,
and Stamets
not
and
holding
Saru
secrets.
Yeah, I love the fact that they didn't hold the secrets, and yet it gave us this great moment where Tilly is wrestling with, are they going to think I'm crazy and I've got to tell the truth? And outside of Stamets zapping her with a proton pack, I thought Saru came over and kind of just the way they comfort her and try to understand what was right. And even before that, when Burnham's like, you're not crazy, and like, let me help you solve this problem.
Right. The way she used logic
to
walk her through the problem and solve that problem was so cool.
Yeah. And it's just like what you're saying, Clyde, is just like, yeah, it's family. It's family that all of them on the ship, and they've earned that. And it's just, it's comforting.
See, I think you like this episode, Grant.
Yeah.
I like a lot of the parts of it. I was just a little bit underwhelmed in the fact that, like, ultimately it doesn't feel as driving in the ongoing scope of the story.
Yeah.
And it just felt a little bit more mechanically filler in parts.
It was definitely a setup, somewhat connective tissue episode. Yeah, I'll give you that.
And I get what you're saying. Like, if you look at the main plot, if our A plot is the exploration of these red dots, that didn't really move, right? And so I can understand
just with
that.
The connection to Spock.
Just with but like it's almost like the ship literally did not move. Like it didn't go anywhere. It wasn't exploring that. It was just kind of all tangential.
Right.
What did Burnham do to Spock? How'd she burn him?
Yeah,
I think she burned him.
Yeah, burned him.
She, like, mind burned him. No,
there were theories going around before this episode that they were fucking.
Nah.
What?
And that's why they were spread. You know, that's why they, yeah.
Dude, that's pretty heavy. I was thinking that she might have set up a fake kill on him. Like, she was going to kill him to the point where he's afraid to be around her. And that's a way to scare him away. Like, if she really, like, scared him good, like, I'm going to drop you off a cliff or something if you ever follow me again. Like, I'm never going to be around you. And the person I trusted, I can't trust you anymore.
Okay.
But yours is much more Randy. So I don't know. All right. One last thing I just wanted to point out is that we have seven dots. And so potentially that would mean seven episodes that are kind of already, like, mapped out for the season. Maybe an eighth episode if one's probably going to be a two-parter, at least, that last dot or whatever. And then we also have this Spock storyline that's going to continue building. So that's going to be a couple episodes that might run concurrently or might not. But they obviously they didn't have a dot in this episode. They were able to pad it out with that. Mm-hmm. And then we got to have a Harry Mudd episode. So
sure.
I'm like, okay, we're going to round things out with all of that.
Yeah.
We need a couple Harry Mudd episodes. I'm liking that guy.
At least one, yeah.
He's going to be a part of the crew eventually.
After the short trek, it was so good. Yeah. What was your point there?
Oh, I was hoping that he'll be a part of the crew eventually.
I know, but about the episode numbers.
There wasn't really a good point. I was just thinking of how they kind of map out this whole season. And,
right.
And that they have the structure of the dots, and that's going to kind of work in their favor of like,
yeah.
we can always go to the dot of the week kind of a episode
yeah.
thing.
I kind of hope we don't do that too much.
I get the feeling it's going to be a little kind of less than every other episode. I mean, we've got seven docs. You've got to explore the dots, but also you're going to have time to resolve and kind of figure out kind of post dots. Like once you've been to them, then what do you do? So, but I do feel that this pacing is, you know, we're going to travel to a dot. We're not going to make this like the other shows, but we're also going to give you some background and some character development along the way. Which is just weird because I felt like TNG in particular was able to accomplish both of those at the same time.
We are going long, folks. So
I think we're done.
I think we're done. We've talked this episode to death, but we just watched it, you know, so we could probably go even deeper
yeah.
if we watched it again, took a few more days.
We could just bitch more about stuff.
You could just bitch more.
I think I might actually watch this one again
because yeah.
I think there's a lot there.
Well, I'm definitely going to watch it again. And listener, if you want to watch this episode again and go deeper on it with us, you can join us on Slack. You can do that by going to patreon.com/StarTrekPod and donate $2 an episode, and you get invited to our Slack channel where we dive deep into every episode of Star Trek Discovery. And I want to give a shout out to Karen on the Slack channel, who not only just dissects these episodes so great on the Slack channel.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And throws out so many great talking points and theories. She's also helping to run our Twitter account at Star Trek Pod and doing a fantastic job.
Yeah.
It's so fun. That Twitter account is alive now. It's so great.
I was
Thank
so
you.
Proud of you. I thought, oh, wow, Mike's actually doing a good job on there.
That's not
like,
me.
And then you're like, that's not me.
That's Karen.
Mm-mm. So thank you, Karen. Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right. This was fun, guys. Beware of those ghost fungus and live long and prosper.
I'm surprised nobody said freaks have more fun.
Freaks have more fun.